Welcome back to another episode of The Money Seat, the show where I, your host, Ross Krause, put myself on the hot seat by bringing on various guests to ask me five questions related to money, finance, the economy, the market, and they have not sent me these questions beforehand, so you're listening to them in real time, just like I am. And I'm hoping it leads to some good conversations. And I will not be editing these for the most part to make myself look smarter. Very important points as well. So we'll see what they have to say. And I'm very excited for today's guest is Tom. And Tom, why don't you tell us about yourself so the audience can get to know you a little bit better?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ross. This is great. Ross is has really helped me out over the years with financial consultation, and he's informed me a lot about just sort of helping me get through various different financial situations that I've came into the last couple of years. I've had a lot of changes as far as starting back where I was barely scraping by paycheck to paycheck, and to the point where I was doing decently well, able to save a little bit of money, and now I am a first-time home buyer.
All right.
Able to put a good amount of money away each week, able to invest a little bit, and, you know, just do things that I wasn't able to before because of my financial predicament. And so I'm a personal trainer out of the Chicago area, originally from Boston. Moved here in 2012 to go to grad school at Northwestern, study sports administration. My undergrad was in exercise science, so of course I have a lot of student debt, and I'm sure that's a situation that a lot of people are familiar with at my age, but that's another thing I'm able to chop down. And other than that, you know, I'm still trying to grow my business and become more financially flexible and stable, and Ross has been very helpful with that over the years.
Well, thank you, Tom. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 33.
33, and you said you're a first-time home buyer. Are you married, single, any kids, family?
It's me and my girlfriend. We live here in the new place, so yeah.
And what school did you go to get your degrees and build up that large amount of debt that everyone's?
So I went to UMass. So I started at Florida Atlantic for undergrad. You know, I knew I wanted to get into working in athletics, and I felt like Florida was a great place to do that.
It's true.
Very popular with football down there. But, you know, I was the first to go to college in my family, so I wasn't really privy to how to navigate, you know, the academic sphere and how to make myself available to different internships, whether it's from the private sector of strength and conditioning or with the college football team there. So if I could have gone back, I definitely would have done that, but I did learn later on, and then I did some internships at Harvard and South Carolina and Northwestern, where I became a grad assistant for the basketball team and the strength program. And over time, so I got 2 degrees from UMass. Then I transferred to UMass Boston to go home.
Okay.
Made to school, save a little bit of more money because I was paying out of state. And then I was sort of in this predicament where I was doing internships, trying to figure out where I would work or what I would do. And I wanted to go the GA route, so picked up more college debt and took on about 6 figures in student debt.
Yeah.
And really, since I graduated in 2013, the interest piled up, and I haven't been able to really chop it down except the last few months where, you know, I got secured the down payment for my house, and now I'm just attacking the student loans.
Yeah, that's exciting. So you're from Boston. I assume you're a big big Boston sports guy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Of course, yeah. Rockland, Massachusetts is a suburb south of Boston. And I'm riding with Tom still. So I don't know when this is going to drop, but Super Bowl's coming up this weekend. and hopefully he's a champion again by the time you guys hear this.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were going to ask my – you already asked my, answered my question, but I was going to ask you, Team Brady or Team Belichick?
I'm both.
Oh, both, okay.
You know, they're like divorced parents. I got to stand right in the middle and just
– Twice the gifts.
Everybody's arguing about, you know, who is more valuable to the Patriots, and it's just like, why even do that? You know, they're both the best coach and the best quarterback, and it's really just stupid sports commentary fodder that we tend to get into, but you know, they're both great.
But you're excited. It sounds like you're still a big Tom Brady fan, and you're looking forward to
the
Super Bowl. Okay, yeah, it'll be great to now we can date this podcast and know exactly when we did it.
Right.
Because we're a few days before Super Bowl, Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes.
We might have an answer whether it was Belichick or Brady.
That's true. That is an interesting debate. You know, you don't have to pick a side of who you like more, but it's interesting the side of who's more valuable.
I say it
flips we'll see.
Between 55-45.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. So anyways, yeah, that's good, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. So anyways, let's get into some of those questions. I'm excited to see what you have. So let's fire away number one.
So sorry to interrupt, but the first question, what value does a financial planner and advisor provide to a client?
That's a good question, and it's changed a lot in the last 20 years, you know, since the invention of the internet and investing being more widely available to the common user who didn't necessarily have access before. So I would say my role and my value has changed a lot. While I do help people like yourself and many others out there who want to invest and help with their portfolio management, that's not all of my job. And it's also going to become a smaller and smaller part of my job for a lot of people. So my value is really the advice, is really the positioning myself as a CFO of your life, as a financial consultant, right? Because while you and other clients, you know, we go over your portfolio and your allocation and your 401k, a lot of times it's, Ross, I'm buying a house, how much can I afford? Or Ross, I'm buying a house, how much do I need to leave in cash? Or Ross, I'm buying a house with a girlfriend or with a spouse, do we need to have things in place? Or Ross, I'm getting married, how much life insurance do I need? And do we need to combine finances? Ross, I'm retired. Right, I could go on and on and on about this. And that's where me and my advice helps more. One, Google helps, but Google doesn't know Tom, right? I do. I've been working with you, you know, only for 3 or 4 years, but I'm going to know you infinitely more than Google, who doesn't. And while Google might know a 33-year-old male making your money in your industry, there's probably hundreds of thousands or millions of those people, and you're different than a lot of those people in your demographic. And so getting that personally tailored advice is where my value comes in, based on what I do, how I work with you, how I know you, and kind of knowing the bigger picture. And I've actually changing my business model a little bit. I still provide regular advice to people based on investments, and I work with that traditional way. But I've also trying to work with people more in a subscription model, kind of like people need Tom to get healthier. I want you to work with Ross to get financially healthier. And that would be $50 a month, $100 a month, whatever it is, based on, you know, maybe you need a simple cash flow, debt management, you know, budget help a few times a year. Maybe you need something complex of retirement planning. Maybe you need someone to just review and make sure you're taking advantage of all your benefits at work and your 401k is allocated, right? And you could invest and go on Robinhood or Fidelity if you want on your own, but I could still be there and position myself for bigger picture advice. So that's where I think, you know, I have to position myself where I'm irreplaceable. So like, if you don't have me, to be honest, you could still buy and sell stocks on your own. You might not want to, but there's lots of people who do that and lots of tools, which doesn't make me that valuable, to be honest. But the planning, the advice, the bigger picture stuff, the knowing you intimately and knowing your life and your needs and your wants and your situation, that's a lot harder to replace. So that would be my value. And that stuff takes time and patience. as well, which is why I kind of encourage people to find someone like that in their life and stick with them for the longer term. Because the more I know you, the more I see you grow, the better I can help. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel I can relate to that a lot because it's the same thing with
exactly
exercise mm-hmm. and personal training. And yeah. it's the same thing in a lot of other industries where a lot of people are just taking on the do-it-yourself model.
Right.
And it's easier to do that because you have YouTube. And I'm sure people can get an effective workout on their own, and I hope that they do. But it's important to have somebody that you know and you can trust
yes.
that can help guide you in a direction that you otherwise wouldn't have been able to get to. So
yeah,
I can totally relate to that. And
yeah,
it makes perfect sense.
And to expand a little bit, some of the value is while you can buy an elliptical at home, or you could get an investment on your own at home, you need someone that is going to hold you accountable to get up, to use it, right, to actually work sure. with you on it, right? And that's like the intangible thing that you can't necessarily measure, but like having the tools doesn't really help you that much if you're not using them and you're not using them correctly. And that's mm-hmm. a big part of our job too, right? And a big part of working with you is that I know if I book an appointment with Tom at this date, I'm going to show up and he's going to get the most out of it. And some of that stuff is invaluable. You know, like with me, I know if I'm working with you, we're going to get the budget done and I'm going to make sure I follow up with you and you're going to stick to it, as opposed to you saying, oh, I could maybe set it up. And then a few weeks go by and other things in life come into place. So then your New Year's resolutions go to the wayside in March and you're back to where you were before. Mm-hmm. So that's where,
sure.
where our industries really align a lot, and where we, mm-hmm. I think, add value in very similar ways. Which is also why I thought it'd be great to have you on here, because the service industry is definitely, it's a service, right? It's not a product. It's a mm-hmm. service. It's us. It's you. And I think that's important to know, that if someone doesn't like you or they don't like me or the way we work, that's fine. We're probably not going to be good to work together. At the same time, if we mesh well and we have a good personality and, you know, we get along and you listen to us, you're going to have really good results. And those are always the better clients, not necessarily for me, someone who has, you know, the most amount of money. Doesn't necessarily mean they're a better client as well. And
sure.
And for you, it might not be, you know, someone who's a health nut. Some might be good and some might drive you crazy or be bad. I'm sure you've seen it all too.
Definitely variant, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect.
And for all comers, absolutely.
Yeah, so thanks for that question. So let's move on to question two.
So what are the factors that should shape an individual's investment strategy?
Yeah, so there's really three main ones. The first one is how comfortable they are taking risk. So you said you're 33, I mean, I'm 32, we're basically the same age. But my portfolio is probably gonna look a little bit different than yours, not a lot, because let's say on a scale of 1 to 100, I'm like 100 in terms of risk, 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 throw it all out there. And most people are not. You know, you might be an 80 or a 90. So your portfolio might be scaled a little bit back. So it's a huge, huge difference, but it's a huge determining factor in your portfolio. The second one is age. And I'm going to put time horizon as well in that. So if there's someone who's 100 and I'm 100, they're not going to be invested the same if they're 60, right? Or 50 and I'm 20 or 30, that has to be a difference in how you invest them. So you add both of those together, their age, and by age, I usually need age and time horizon kind of means how old are you / how quickly do you need this money, right? Because you could be 60, but I guess if you don't need the money anytime soon, then you might be able to invest like a 30-year-old, if that makes sense. But
yeah.
If you're 60 and you're retiring in 5 years and this is your nest egg, then you can't invest like a 20-year-old, even if you have the, you know, highest risk profile as well on that. So those are really the main things to do. The third and last one is based on your goals. So if you have aggressive goals and you're Tom's age and you want to retire in 20 years, you're going to have to invest a little bit more aggressively than someone who might have, I'm 30, I could retire when I'm 70, I could work forever, I don't really care, money's not that important,
mm-hmm.
right? It's going to be different. So So we tweak it. That one might not be as important, but if you have a very unique goal, a very different goal that's not normal, then yeah, we're going to have to change your investment strategy up or down depending on that. And once again, sometimes you might have to get out of your comfort zone and take more risk to get that goal. So you might be at a 50 out of 100, but if you have very aggressive goals, I'm going to discuss that we might have to push that up to 60 or 70 on the scale as well. But it all comes into play. For if someone would call me right now and say, could you recommend me a good investment? I'd be like, I don't know you. I don't know how old you are. I don't know how much you need this money. And I don't know how aggressive you are in the market. Once I know that, then I can help anyone without, you know, seeing their face. But yeah, but that's really where it goes to. And those are the main three factors. And that's why the internet and versus working with someone is a difference, because the internet will give you a generic portfolio for Tom, right? But Tom's not a generic person. And that's kind of where it brings all back to that same thing of very important to know you, know your client. And there's a lot of great advisors that do that out there. And there's a lot that don't. And you're going to see more personal, tailored advice being the wave of the future, because it's just so important. Once again, I have a lot of clients that are around my age, and they're all invested differently, all of them. Mm-hmm. And because they're all different, they're all different people. I mean, what's the right. we're all snowflakes, so it's a similar thing. Very few people have a really the same portfolio. So hopefully that helps. And if you're working with someone or trying to do this on your own, which is fine, those are the three things you need to take in mind when you do this as gotcha. Well, because it's not just cookie cutter. It's a little more complex than that.
Sure. So age or risk, the risk you're willing to take,
yes.
number one, age two.
Uh-huh.
And then goals three.
Yeah, and age slash time horizon, because there's more to it than just age. So if you're 30, right, but you want this money in 5 years to pay for your wedding or right, that's gonna
your
change.
Risk is
yeah,
gonna go down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I've taught you well. I'm glad. So that's why age and so it's really four things, but I combine them together because it's like 2A and 2B. But yeah, very important. Very important. People will miss that. They'll just do the age thing, and then they'll forget that if they need this money in a few years, the age doesn't actually matter. It's the less than 5 years time horizon that matters. So that's where it comes a little tricky. And you see people where they get crushed. You know, the market goes down 30% last year in March because of COVID. And if you needed that money in those, 3 or 4 months, I hope you had another plan, right? Because you're taking a 30% loss in your investment. So that's where it all comes in. You just don't know what's going to happen, and you have to make sure you're prepared. So yeah, those are the three points. That sums it up.
Great. So third question.
Question three. Yeah.
I'm sure you probably answer this all the time, especially probably just from, friends or whatever, what are your thoughts on cryptocurrency? Who and why should they be using it? Like, what type of person should be using it? Why should they use it? Should anybody use it?
Yeah, so someone asked that before, and I don't want to repeat my answer, but I'll give a different answer to your who should be using it. I didn't get into everything on it, but I would say cryptocurrency right now, a lot of people are treating it as investments, and I would say it's probably not an investment, as it is more of a trading. Yeah, gambling is not the best, but more of a trading philosophy where you're really looking to buy it and sell it in a shorter time frame to make money, as opposed to buying it and holding it for 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. And I think most of it's because there's just not enough historical data to back up what's going to happen. So if 20 years goes down the road and cryptocurrency is still a big thing, then it might change. But for now, we're going to lump it in the trading category. So it means it has to be right for someone who, one, that money isn't something they absolutely need. If you're putting in like necessary life money that you can't lose, I wouldn't recommend cryptocurrency even if you're on a scale, even if you're 100, like me on a scale of 100, because for me, it passes the threshold of being too risky to lose it all. And if it's money that you can't afford, right, that's a different story. But let's say you have $5,000 and it's play money. It's money that you trade or you go to Vegas or do whatever with that isn't, you know, if you lose it, you're not out. You can still pay all your rents. You're still okay. Then I would say cryptocurrency isn't a bad thing to look at as an option to make some short-term money on. There's obviously a few issues with that. One being it's expensive. If you got a Bitcoin, right, how you buy it, how you sell it. I don't know how above ground it is. I haven't done it myself. So my question would be to make sure you understand what you're buying, what you're trading, what the risks are. Do some research. Take a look at a 1 year, 1 month, 3 day, chart of it, and just see how volatile it is. And just make sure you're understanding it, because I don't want you to just close your eyes and throw darts at the board and hope it sticks. There's better ways to make money short term. But once again, for the right person who understands the risks that go into it and has a little bit of a fundamental analysis background, go for it. There's plenty of people who've made money off of it, just knowing it's risky. Right. And you could lose it all. Once you understand that, it's fine. To be honest, I'm just not here to be able to help you. I'm not going to be able to help you tell you when to buy and sell it. You're on your own for that.
Sure.
Yeah, right. As well.
Gotcha.
Have you done any cryptocurrency selling or thought about it?
Only what I could afford.
So okay.
Throwing a substantial amount of money at it, threw a couple $100 in total.
Perfect.
Just out of curiosity. And, I did this probably when it hit 19,000 initially back in
a few years ago.
Maybe 2016.
Yeah.
And then I went right back to 13,000. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
I'm done, right?
I don't want anything to do with it.
So you didn't make any money then, it sounds, which is fine. You didn't make any money.
No, okay.
It
kind of reminded me of what happened last week where you see all these people.
Oh, with making, GameStop and AMC and Reddit. Yeah.
You see a lot of people making a lot of money and you want to get in on it. And it's just sort of, it's intoxicating.
And right.
And it's like, it's like this sort of fear of missing out.
It is.
And you get into your head and you're like, wait, is this going to be the next big thing?
Mm-hmm.
And you just gotta, like you said, do your research.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's made a lot of people rich.
Yes.
But do your research, spend what you're comfortable losing.
For these things, most, I would say the majority of people lose money than make money, but the people who do make money tend to make a lot of it. I would say to put the little capper on the question is also make sure you're aware of the tax consequences. Nobody realizes that if you buy GameStop at whatever, $10 a share, you sold it for $100 and you make $10,000 on GameStop, which is great. These are almost always short-term gains, meaning you're paying taxes on the income. And if you're in a 22 or 30% tax bracket, you're about to owe 22 to 30% taxes on that income. And there's going to be a tax bill that's going to come due. If this was in 2020, it's about to come due in a few months. If it was for this year, luckily you have another year to do it. But people don't understand that they're about to owe 20 to 30% taxes on all that gains. And if they didn't then take that gains and keep enough of it on hand, or they took that gains and tried to roll it in another thing and then lost, enough of the losses might not offset the gains, and then all of a sudden they're owing a tax bill that they didn't plan for. So please make sure you understand that. That's very important. If you're going to do that, you got to be prepared to owe the taxes on it, because the government is the one person you don't want to owe money to. They're not forgiving. They're going to find you. And if you don't pay it back, I mean, there's serious consequences. Obviously, I don't have to tell you, but if there's one person you should be afraid of owing money to, it's, should be the government. So just keep that in mind as well when you're doing all this stuff, that even if it all works out and you made a bunch of money, you got to owe Uncle Sam. There's no way around that. There's no legal way around that. So that's, I think that's important to reason to for people to realize, because it means that their gains aren't as much as they think they are, because taxes eat a large amount into that as well.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's a good question. Let's do question four. Yeah.
All right. So I think you touched on this, as far as like maybe in our last, question, but, mm-hmm. You know, aside from traditional investment strategies like stocks and real estate, are there any other investment opportunities people should be aware of?
Yeah, a few people have asked me that question, and you know, but I'll
be an original.
No. It's good. I got into something like they asked about gold, or they asked about into passive income or something, and I thought the gold people asked about those questions because they were worried if anything collapsed in the market, should they invest in gold? But your question is a little bit different. You're just like, hey, basically, I don't want to have all my eggs in the market, which is fine, to be honest. If you want to, you don't want to have, you know, money in the bank doesn't earn much. All your money in the market's fine, but those are two things. What happens if the market goes down, mm-hmm. As well? So what are alternative investing. I'll use that. So if you go to alternative investing, there's a few options. And just like with cryptocurrency, I always caution people, make sure you know what you're getting yourself into before you do it. And for these, I bring up, you know, private REITs, which is a real estate investment trust, private equity companies, some hedge fund stuffs that require a larger amount of initial investment. So they promise higher upsides, which is always how alternative investing works. You know, the market, if you're doing well, could be, you know, 8% over 20 years. Alternative investing, you know, these private equities and stuff are going to be offering much more because you're taking more risk. So make sure you understand the risk of it is that, one, you need more capital to put in. Two, these aren't as regulated as, you know, buying a stock on the stock exchange. So there's some risks in that. And the biggest thing people don't understand is the liquidity. So they talk to John Doe or Jane Doe, their neighbor, and they said, yep, I got my hedge fund private equity person, and they're promising me, you know, 20% returns on this investment. And they're like, oh, well, I want 20% returns. And then they call them up and they give them the money. And first of all, they never do their research. The person they're giving the money to isn't going to go over for a lot of times some of the drawbacks. And usually that's liquidity. And I tell people that if you put, and usually this is 25, 50, 100,000. These things are not, you know, here's $1,000. That's probably going to be way below what their minimums are to invest. So you're talking about a decent sum of money for this stuff. You can't just go on the market and be like, okay, I need my money back. And I, you know, go and click a button and sell my shares. It's not how it works. A lot of these things are very illiquid and have certain times, maybe once or twice a year, that you could redeem your equity interest in the companies. And even so, you might not get it all back. So once again, I had a company, a client, they had $50,000 and, you know, they wanted to get the money out. And I called the company and say, we do redemptions once a year and it'll be in 9 months. And that's it, right? And it's just like, just like having a house. It's great if you have a house and you have equity in it, but if you need money from your house in an emergency, you don't just get the money. I mean, it's a process, you selling all that stuff. There's a lot that goes involved. And so you have to understand that these are risky investments that don't necessarily have the liquidity. So I would say, once again, I'm not deterring people from doing it. I'm deterring people from doing it blindly without understanding what they're doing. So if you don't, it's the same thing where someone who goes on HGTV and watches the professionals fix up a house and then goes and buys a fixer-upper and thinks they're going to do it and make the same amount of money. This stuff requires expertise, it requires knowledge, it requires research. Please know what you're getting into. And then if you understand all those risks and you're still ready to do it, then by all means, go for it, assuming you're comfortable losing or not having access to a certain amount of principal every year. Those are the big things for alternatives. Something that's a little bit more affordable is people do art, to be honest. People do fine wines. There's some websites where instead of buying a a painting or a wine, you could like buy shares of wine or shares of paintings and stuff. Yeah. I'm not
That's
as
from happening with sports cards.
Yeah, yeah. So people essentially now, regular people like us who can't go out and buy tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars of stuff without, you know, going bankrupt or putting too much money in one thing, but want to own fractional shares of that can. I'm not as familiar with it. I just know that I would give you the same advice as I did with the private equity firms and private REITs. Understand what you're getting. Understand the liquidity. Understand all that stuff. Make sure you have a really good basis of understanding of what you're investing in alternatively, and then do it. Because you don't need that for a stock. You literally can just be like, I want to buy Apple today. And then if you just want to sell it in a few days, you just do it, right? You don't have to have a fundamental understanding of Apple's balance sheet to do, right? You're just, you know, the market is just shares you're buying and selling. It's always going to be available to get the liquidity out. But this stuff isn't the same. It just, once again, make sure you know what you're doing. Make sure you know what you're getting. Make sure you do your research. And yeah, I mean, we have some stuff at our firm as well that we do for the right person as well. They're just more expensive. But there's ways out there, Tom. I would say usually meant for people who have, you know, higher earners who are having 10, 20, 30, 50,000, 100,000 plus of money left over once they've maxed out their 401k and maxed out their retirement plans and everything else is all set and paid for. It's just, you know, the upper class problems who what else to do with my money. Those are good things to do. But there's a lot of positives out there. Once again, I tell people, feel free to say, hey, Ross, I'm looking at this. Can you be a second opinion and research this? And I'm happy to do that for people. I just think don't go blindly into something because, you know, your uncle, your neighbor said, I made 20% a year on that. It's not that simple. So that's my answer to that. But I think there's a lot of interesting stuff because the market isn't the only way to invest is also my point. Right. There's lots of other things to do. Yeah.
For sure. Last question.
Question five.
It's sort of shifting gears a little bit.
Okay.
From one circumstance that we just talked about to another. And it was one familiar with me when I just started working with you. And, you know, someone struggling paycheck to paycheck or even worse than that. What is your advice to them?
Yeah. So that's actually part of where I'm gearing my subscription model and my advice towards is those beginners, people who either just graduated college or they're later in life because they built up some debt and they had advanced degrees. And they're like, okay, I have a job. It pays me money. But I also have these debts. I also, you know, might have other things in life that I'm trying to do. And I feel like I have money. And what's my best way to be spending it, whether it's, you know, investing, whether it's paying off debts, whether it's where I'm living, all that stuff. And really it's like the next, like adulting. I call it the adulting, like grasping the financial side of life is the adulting thing where we didn't have to do this when we're younger or people are taking care of us for the most part. So the first thing you always start with is trying to manage debt is always, for me, the most important thing. The most important thing is setting up a budget. So first we have to set up a budget. If you don't have a budget, then it's really hard to do any other goals because we're just like throwing money at things and hoping that's right. And that's never a good plan. So set up a budget. We need to know what we're taking in, what our taxes are, and what our general expenses are, and what are some of the things that we might not have to pay, but you know, if you, Tom, you love going to sports games and that's part of your budget and it's not negotiable because you want to live a life that's fun and worth living. We have to add all that in there. So we make sure that we're really doing what you want and money's not an issue. So once we have the budget, then we have to manage the debt. We absolutely have to make sure, what are your debts? What are you paying on your student loans, your car payments, your credit cards? Is that too much? Is that too little? What's the forgiveness plan for the student loans, right? How's it working? And then make sure that we're going to tackle that where we're putting as much in as possible that can pay it off as quickly as possible without you having to be on ramen and food stamps, right? Without sacrificing other goals. Because unless you have debt paid off, you can't really progress to the next phase of life, which is building wealth, creating a nest egg, providing for a family, and eventually retiring. You can't do any of that if you haven't managed the debt side within reason. Once again, you could have some debt, but you need to at least have that under control, and you have to make sure you have a plan for it. Otherwise, once again, you can't go to, you know, phase two as well. So that's usually what I do for people like you in your situation is first we want to go over that. Once we have that all managed, and everyone's different too. Like you might have a lot of student loan debt, but it might be already under control. Or you might have some credit card debt that's not as much, but that's not under control, right? Who knows? So once we manage that situation, then we work on accumulating wealth, saving money, building up for your wedding, kids, you know, family, life, whatever you want to do, retirement, all that stuff, and making sure that your money that you're saving and the budget we did is going to the right bucket and paying things off. Because that stuff's a little harder to do on your own, and most people don't want to do it. Just like working out is hard. The idea of doing a budget and doing all that for most people is not the most fun thing. Otherwise, they'd be doing something similar to what I'm doing, to be honest. I love that stuff. I'm nerdy about it. It makes me happy. So I tell you, outsource that. I'm happy to help you. That's part of why I work with you, and let's do that so you can do the fun stuff you want to do in life. And then we could focus on the next level. But a lot of people just want to, you know, get rich all of a sudden, and it's not like that. You know, it takes discipline. It takes work, right? When we were working together, you made a lot of progress, which is fantastic. But a lot of the stuff you're doing now, we couldn't start off the way we're doing now, right? As you know, it took time. It took 5 years. And that's actually, I thought, pretty efficient, to be honest. Most people could take a little bit longer. So it stuff takes time. It takes discipline. It takes energy. And there's no, like, get rich quick. There's no, like, quick way to do it. It's not easy. It's hard. And it's, it's, you know, that's why everyone isn't in a great situation, because it's hard work. But it can be done. And if you don't want to do it on your own, you don't have the knowledge or abilities to do it, there's nothing wrong with that. There's me, and there's lots of people like me out there that are willing to help you, that are qualified. Once again, not just, you know, your uncle, your neighbor who, you know, read a blog once, right? That's let the professionals do it is what I give people advice for what I do, for what you do, for what auto mechanics do, for what a doctor does, all that stuff. But yeah, you really want to start that out. If you're older, it's a different story, especially if you have family and kids. Right. But right now I'm saying you don't have family, you don't have kids. Let's take care of you. But let's say you did have a family or kids. Then I would say we want to make sure that they're taken care of, which is usually life insurance or some other ways where we set something up, a college fund. Right. A lot of people love their kids or their spouse. Right. And they want to make sure if something happens to them, the other person isn't, you know, I don't know if screwed's the right word, but they're not in an unfortunate financial position. So that's also something we look at, a very basic thing, and making sure that they're covered in the unlikely situation if anything happens to you, disability, whatever, that most likely won't. But those are also things we set up as well to make sure the protection side is very important. Make sure you're managing your debt and you're protected, because bad things do happen to people. And most of the time, people are not prepared or thinking about them, because that's not what they do, right? You don't go around, for the most part, thinking about all the terrible things that can happen to you. My job is just to make sure that you're protected if that happens, so you don't have to worry about it. You can do that. So hopefully that makes sense. It's kind of a combination of those. And it depends on your age and your kids and all that stuff and your priorities and life and, you know, all that stuff. But it's always good to start at the basics for people, and then and then work your way up as well. So we could all be like Tom in 5 years, start from nothing and then build up in 5 years time frame, 10, 20 years, and then really see what the value of all this is over time, because it's going to take a long, long time.
Thank you, Ross. Really appreciate it. And
that was question five. Awesome. Well, those were good questions, and I like, even if you ask a similar question and I could tackle it in a different way, because with each question and subject, you know, you could talk for hours and hours about one subject. So it's always good to go back and revisit a similar topic and just discuss it in a little bit different way as well, which I think is good for you and good for people listening. But yeah, thanks again. It was great having you on the Money Seat, Tom, and I hope you had a good time, and
absolutely,
thank you, Tom, and for everyone else, hope you had a good good day, and we'll see you next time on another episode of the Money Seat. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.